This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Tana Weingartner filling in for Lucy May. We seem to be experiencing a loneliness epidemic. 20% of adults report feeling lonely. That can lead to isolation and affect our mental, physical, and societal health. Throw in the holidays, and this can be a really tough time of year. Today, we're going to talk about why the problem is so bad and what we can all do about it, along with what services are available. If this conversation feels like too much for you, it's okay to turn down your radio and tune back in about 25 minutes. And please, if you or someone you know is dealing with loneliness, you can reach a nationwide crisis text line anytime by sending the word CONNECT to 741-741. All right, here to talk about loneliness and how to handle it, especially during the holidays, are Dr. Sha'iri Turner, Chief Health Officer with Crisis Text Line. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Turner.
Thank you for having us.
And Dr. Stephen Rush, Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at UC's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Rush.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again.
All right. I want to start with you. So just briefly, Dr. Rush, I mentioned that the U.S. is in a loneliness epidemic. Can you just quickly explain this declaration from the Surgeon General?
Well, I think it's interesting that we're calling it a loneliness epidemic in 2024, now almost 2025. We are seeing that we are, as a society, paying more and more attention to loneliness. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, we didn't really have a lot of data, but could estimate that about 25% of the population could relate to feeling lonely. And after the pandemic had started later in 2020, that rose to 36%. We started to see some decline over the last few years. In 2023, 17% of people were indicating they were lonely, and now 20%, although there are certain demographics for whom loneliness is a much more severe problem, and that usually falls down lines of identification. So minority populations, for example, in 2022, 57% of bisexual adults and between 56 and 64% of transgendered individuals reported feeling lonely, compared to, in that same year, between 20 and 25% of the whole population.
Okay. Let's start kind of at the 20,000 foot view. Why are we growing more lonely and maybe more isolated as a society?
That's a difficult question to ask, but I can speculate. I think we have had an uprising in what we know to be norms. In early 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic totally changed the way that we function on an everyday basis. Social distancing, lockdowns, reduced face-to-face interactions significantly increased loneliness. And you add on to that the evolving social norms that are coming with evolution of society. So we have changes in the ways that people interact socially. Some of those may be good. Some of them have evidence to support that they're bad. Social media, for example, is highly tied to negative outcomes of depression and anxiety and loneliness. We kind of live in a society now, post-pandemic, where only 35% of people feel that we have returned to the baseline pre-pandemic, and breaking some of those habits that we created for our health, social distancing, staying away from other people, may have turned into longer term habits that isolate us in emotionally negative ways.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Turner, Dr. Rush mentioned some demographic groups that seem to be more affected. What about age demographics? You know, are young people or older people more lonely?
Well, we know that we have a youth mental health epidemic as well, where young people's suicide rates are increasing, especially young people of color. So we at Crisis Text Line, 70% of our texters, so the individuals who text in for support, 70% of those are under the age of 25. So we're reaching a demographic that is comfortable texting in in their need for help about any topic at any time. But it does tell us that young people are seeking support and in need of support.
Why do we think that is? What factors are playing into that?
Well, just like Dr. Rush said, I think it's multifactorial, right? And more recently, in these recent past few weeks and months, you know, election stress on top of just sort of our existing levels of social unrest, racial unrest. We have, you know, the world is at war. So there's this kind of constant exposure to news cycles. So we are always aware and experiencing all of the negative things that might be happening outside of our own communities. And our minds just are tuned in just genetically to hold on to those, the negative things, the things that are frightening more so than the positive stories or the hopeful stories.
Is that, Dr. Rush, heightened at the holidays?
Yeah, you know, the holidays can be a particularly difficult time for people who are already feeling lonely, or in the case of what I spend my time doing, people who already have psychiatric illness. When it comes to loneliness, the holidays are difficult because they tend to emphasize togetherness, right? Culturally, through social media portrayals, commercials, as they've been playing since October now, kind of highlight the holidays as a time that we are all together. And that can quite easily lead to those without close connections feeling more isolated. Holidays are also always very difficult for people who have lost loved ones. The first holidays may be the most particularly painful, as the occasions, the holidays, highlight the absence of loved ones. And then there are estranged family relationships. You know, again, with this idea that holidays are supposed to be a time where we are all together, people who don't have a family of origin in which there are positive relationships can feel an estrangement that surfaces during the holidays, creating more emotional distress, and an increased sense of exclusion.
We're talking about loneliness during the holidays. You can join the discussion at 513-419-7100, or you can email us a comment or question at talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Rush, what's the line between loneliness and depression or something more?
Well, I think actually maybe it's more helpful, if I may, to define the difference between loneliness and being alone.
Okay.
Because that might not be clear. So loneliness is a subjective feeling of isolation. It is a dissatisfaction that stems from the difference between the desired social connections that you have and the actual social connections you have. Whereas being alone, by definition, is a physical state of solitude. Loneliness has an emotional impact, often sadness, emptiness, or longing. Being alone can be neutral. For some people, being alone can be positive. There's also a sense that when you are lonely and social needs are unmet, there's some loss of agency. These things feel beyond an individual's control, and loneliness can feel imposing and unwanted. So we're already kind of seeing that loneliness tiptoes pretty close to what we might consider to be depression. Mm-hmm. I think the difference in a clinical setting is a depressive disorder is going to start interfering with your ability to function, whether that's socially, occupationally, or academically. That's probably where the line in the sand is in terms of the sadness of loneliness and the dysphoria of depression.
All right. So, Dr. Turner, if we're really looking at loneliness here, what can we do to address loneliness or maybe some isolation, especially during the holidays?
Yes. So at Crisis Text Line, we provide free 24/7 mental health support and crisis intervention, high quality, on a text platform in English and in Spanish. So for anyone who's struggling with loneliness, they can receive this in the moment support through volunteers who are live volunteers who are trained and supervised by our mental health professionals. On the other side of that, we know that volunteering is oftentimes an opportunity to connect with others, and that the benefits of being a volunteer help both the person who's volunteering and the person who's receiving those gifts or that caring outreach. We know that 91% of our volunteers feel that volunteering at Crisis Text Line provides them with a sense of community, so something to counter these feelings of loneliness, and that just doing our training and participating and supporting texters actually helps to build the resilience and counter the mental health challenges that our volunteers may have.
And what about, you know, the people, folks that maybe aren't ready to reach out to the text line? What are some things that they can maybe do if they're just feeling, you know, this malaise?
Yeah. So we had a report earlier in the year, and it was called What Do Young People in Crisis Need from Their Communities? And really, it addresses those additional things that one can do outside of reaching out for mental health support. And it included, obviously, opportunities for social connection, so opportunities to connect with others, practicing the arts, so music, fine arts, theater, reading, so books or audiobooks, exercise, sports, team sports, and going to outdoor spaces, so parks, recreational areas where you can meet up with others, where you can participate in sports, where you can enjoy nature. So this is kind of a short list of things that one can do to counter these feelings of loneliness or isolation during these times.
Thank you for that. We are going to continue this conversation in just a moment. And then later in the program, the history of the Shillitoe's elves. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Tana Weingartner filling in for Lucy May. Today we're talking about loneliness and tips for building connections and broadening social networks. We're speaking with Dr. Sha'iri Turner, Chief Health Officer with Crisis Text Line, and Dr. Stephen Rush, Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at UC's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience. If you have a question, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We've had an email from Nicholas who says, I moved to Cincinnati barely knowing anyone 2 years ago. Found making friends in church and in similar interests was my best option. Also a good way to meet people is volunteering, which Dr. Turner, you were talking about that. Is it enough to have sort of superficial interactions, or, you know, is that enough to sort of lift your spirits? I don't know if that's the right phrasing, but how deep do these connections need to be?
Right. That's such a great question because it's very much a personal question. You know, some people are very like the person who emailed in, going to places like churches, social environments to be able to connect and meet people, and then decide. Everybody's different. Their level of interaction is going to be different. So some people will want to have very deep relationships with a few people, and other people feel quite energized by a large group setting where they're able to chat, hear about other people's experiences, connect with others at a higher level, and not feel the need to do anything deeper in that moment. So my answer to the question is it's what is best for each person, the level of connection. It's knowing yourself and knowing what level of connection is most meaningful to you.
And Dr. Rush, why is volunteering such a highly recommended solution, if you will?
Yeah, it's a good question. So volunteering kind of forces one to step outside of yourself. Volunteering can be powerful in as much as it gives you a sense of control. You are engaging in an activity of your own will for the benefit of others. And anything that we do that takes us outside of ourselves in that way stops us from focusing on what we're unhappy with internally and can convert that into helping other people is usually going to make us feel better than we did going into it.
Okay.
It is a connection that's very valuable.
Dr. Turner, let's talk about crisis text line. You've mentioned it a bit before. Exactly how does it work?
Right. So anyone, we say a crisis to you is a crisis to us. So anyone can text, in this case, connect to 741-741, and they will receive support from a live volunteer-trained crisis counselor who's supervised by our mental health professional staff. Whatever they text in with, they'll first receive an automated response that asks what their crisis is. And that's the only automation really that we use. We are always live with no bots or anything else. We're about the human to human connection. But once that text comes in and the crisis is identified, our triage algorithm helps to determine those texters that are high risk, and they're moved to the top of the line or the top of the queue, sort of like a mental health emergency room, and so that they receive support sooner. And our volunteer crisis counselors are trained in empathy, active listening, collaborative problem solving, cultural competence, and safety planning, so that they can take a texter from a hot moment to a cool, calm, through really non-judgmental support that empowers each texter to use their own strengths and coping strategies to help with a solution.
How are your volunteers trained in those areas?
Yes. So anyone can volunteer. We don't just require people to have a mental health background, because our training is online, self-paced, 15 hours of comprehensive training that focuses on the areas that I spoke about, empathy, active listening, et cetera. And we've successfully trained over 75,000 volunteers this way. And it's completely virtual, self-paced, so that they have the freedom to learn and how to support others empathetically. And we find that when we speak to our volunteers, when we've surveyed our volunteers, they've found that they're really comfortable applying these skills, not only to the texters on our platform, but outside of their volunteer hours with their friends and loved ones and colleagues.
Is it just, maybe this is a silly question since it's called Crisis Text Line, but is it just texting, or is there an option to speak to a person at some point?
No, it's purely by text. So SMS, web chat, and WhatsApp are the modalities that we use. And we've never been a telephonic hotline service, because we've found and demonstrated that we can be equally as effective using text in this way to help support people in crisis.
And Dr. Rush, or even I guess Dr. Turner, but I'll start with Dr. Rush. How is it that we're so isolated when people are constantly talking about being overscheduled? You know, I have so much going on.
Yeah, I think it's the way in which we're scheduled, which has changed significantly since the COVID-19 pandemic. So a lot more of what we're doing is online, and there is there is a social connection there. It's not as in-depth and as meaningful, perhaps, as an in-person interaction with people, where you can read body language and better pick up on nonverbal cues that create a sense of belonging between two people. Mm-hmm. I also think that there is an ever-increasing, I'm going to use the word pandemic, of social media use. I hope that's not too controversial, but social media is not an insignificant factor when it comes to loneliness, depression, anxiety, and a number of other mental health problems. Social media often showcases very curated and idealized versions of people's lives, leading other people looking at those posts to feel inadequate or to feel excluded. The fear of missing out is something that I hadn't heard before social media existed. And I think that's the place where you might see that the most. there's also an illusion of connection through social media. It can create this false sense of connection that ultimately leaves people feeling unsupported, and particularly unsupported in moments of genuine need.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess that kind of brings up a good question to put to you, Dr. Turner. Like, it seems sort of this is maybe a double-edged sword, right? Like, on the one side, we're talking about how social media is isolating all of this, but then with crisis text line, that is on a phone. And while it's not social media, it's kind of in that same realm. Talk a little bit about how you balance that.
Yeah, so it's different than social media because it's a structured platform that allows one individual to support another individual, right? Where when we think of, you know, traditional social media, there's likes, there's a whole plethora of interactions and viewing of others' lives. Whereas with crisis text line, it's that accessibility, that in the moment support that one person can give to another person at any time. We also are volunteers. We love and so appreciate our volunteers and found it was very important to create a volunteer community. So there is a community that exists so that the volunteers can support each other and that we make sure that they're getting everything that they need, the tips, the resources, et cetera. But, you know, our platform is very different than traditional social media because it's really designed to help one person connect and help another.
And what are maybe some tips for older folks who are retired? Maybe they live alone. They can't get around as well as they used to. I will say my parents they'll be mad at me if I call them elderly, but they can both text, but that's not, you know, what they're really into. What about recommendations for reaching folks like that? Just maybe if you want to help your grandparent out or something. Dr. Rush.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. I just randomly picked you because I realized I didn't address that to anybody.
I mean, this is really difficult because elderly individuals are a very vulnerable group. Many seniors feel more isolated during the holidays, especially if they have reduced mobility, chronic health issues, and as we age, the loss of a spouse and the loss of friends. Creating a connection in that setting probably needs to lean into community resources, which include variations of places that you can make connections, whether that's spiritually through a church or religious organization or other community resources that are there. For example, the Queen City, the Queen City Clubhouse, for example, and the Recovery Center of Hamilton County are organizations that have everyday classes on any topic you might be able to imagine, whether it's pottery or writing poetry, that allows people an ability to connect. For an older adult, though, that would mean having an understanding of how someone gets to a place like Queen City Clubhouse. So assisting in transportation with elderly people might have a more significant impact than it seems on its surface, but also taking the time out of our days and reaching out to those people, elderly or otherwise, that we know are vulnerable to this loneliness, to make that connection, whether that's on the telephone or via FaceTime calls. Making the connection yourself is maybe the most powerful thing you can do.
And then just really quickly, when should you see a medical doctor? When in your loneliness
journey? And it's a good question because about 33% of people who identify as lonely are also receiving treatment for depression. And so loneliness is tied to a host of mental health issues, depression, anxiety, cognitive decline. We also see increased substance use problems when there's loneliness involved. The line I really think is in functioning. Emotions are normal, and feeling lonely, as much as it is unpleasant, is a normal emotion to have. And so the presence of a negative emotion isn't the criteria for seeking help. I think really it is when the negative emotions are taking over your ability to function. You're not going to work, You're not engaging in social activities as you normally would. You're not doing well in school. Those are the lines where we really want people to be sure they reach out to someone in mental health, a mental health professional who can help them understand what's going on.
All right. Very good. Good information. And Dr. Turner, one more time, tell folks how they can reach Crisis Text Line.
Yes, they can reach out either texting CONNECT or HELP to 741-741, AYUDA to 741-741, because we're available in Spanish.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for this interesting conversation. I've been talking with Dr. Sha'iri Turner, Chief Health Officer with Crisis Text Line, and Dr. Stephen Rush, Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at UC's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the Shillitoes Elves, their history, and where they're popping up this year. Stay tuned for that. This is Cincinnati Edition.